We will call this public hearing to order. This is the public hearing for the Lower Colorado Regional Water Plan Planning Group. This is for the IPP. We will be going over the details of the IPP. I do welcome the public here and our group members that have arrived with us. A little bit of housekeeping. Restrooms are out this door to the left and to the right, and if you haven't visited them, they are there. Public comment is appreciated, and we will limit that to 5 minutes. I think that's about it. Andy, I'm glad you're here. Everybody else is a member, so, or a helper.
Oh.
And Aaron?
Okay. Well, then y'all just, impart your knowledge on this plan. I was there for all the pieces, different meetings.
Right.
I'm curious to see how it all fits together.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Well, with that, Neil, I'm going to turn it over to you, and we'll have a grand morning of it.
Justin, you're able to switch over there. No sooner do I even think it, Justin's got it switched. Andy, I think that's a tall ask for me to put it all together in one, but this is it's a summary, but we'll do our best. So basically, today I'm going to go over an overview of the Regional Water Plan development process, so just some background on the overall process, and then go through the initially prepared plan, which is the reason we're having this hearing, is for folks to be able to listen to and then comment on what we call the IPP. So we'll just go through each of the chapters briefly and kind of walk through what's available in those. All right, so why do we plan? And I should mention that all of these initial slides, you'll see the Texas Water Development Board logo is there on the bottom right. All credit to them. There's a link at the top there on where I borrowed these slides from, but just for the background material. So we plan in response to drought. It started in the drought of the 50s, so we did some planning then. We kind of dropped it for a while, and we brought it back in early 2000s with Senate Bill in 1999. So Texas's population is increasing. We know this. Water demand is increasing, 9% statewide, and even more than that in this region. Existing water supplies are expected to decline by 18%. Again, we're talking statewide here, not just in our region. And we're looking at potential water shortages during a drought record of over 3 million acre feet. Again, I talked about the origin. Severe drought in the mid-90s and a Senate Bill 1 in 97 really started this process back up. And the process has been pretty similar since early 2000, although there have been some tweaks along the way coming to this round of planning. The purpose is to have this sort of formal process for development, management, and conservation of water resources and to prepare for and respond to drought conditions. So it is a drought-focused plan. We're supposed to be planning under the assumption that we're going to have a drought that's as bad as the drought of record. We're also considering droughts worse than drought of record in a qualitative way, not a quantitative way yet, but I think that will come in the future. It's supposed to be a bottom-up approach, so we've had a lot of meetings with the public. There's a lot of involvement from water user groups, which are from small utilities, small and large, and other stakeholders. 16 regional planning groups make decisions in the state. It's meant to be a very transparent and public process. Again, that's why we've had these 50-plus public meetings, and we get emails and other interactions. And we're developing these regional water plans every 5 years. And those regional water plans from the 16 regions all roll up into a state water plan, and that's put together by staff at the Water Development Board. So what are the incentives for water users to participate? So the regional water plan is not going to be very good unless we get participation from the stakeholders. So what are their incentives? I think one of the biggest ones is that if you're a utility and you want to get SWIFT funding for building the project that you're using or that you're going to use to get more water supply or make improvements to your system, that project must be recommended in the state water plan in order for you to be eligible for that SWIFT funding. So we talk a lot about that when we're talking with the stakeholders. you know, get your projects into the plan to make yourself eligible for the funding. Also, on the surface water rights permitting side, the permitting the permits that are issued must be consistent with those in the state water plan, so that needs to be copacetic there. And another note on the water board funding, projects must be consistent for other funding programs. So it's not just SWIFT, but there's some other requirements for having your projects in the plan and their consistency for other funding sources. Okay, so the lower Colorado region that we're in, shown by that ellipse there, so we're starting kind of up in the basin a little bit, up there in Burnett and other counties, and then all the way down to the Gulf Coast to Colorado, Wharton, and Matagorda counties. I guess I have a pointer here, I can be pointing. And this inset shows, basically this region is following the Colorado River, and so the Colorado River is running down the center of a lot of the counties that are part of this, and then adjacent counties. The Regional Water Planning Group, of which some members are here today, we are looking to get, well, first we should say these are volunteers, so folks are not getting paid to do their job here. They are here as volunteers. Various levels of experience in the water industry, although most of the folks are pretty dang experienced in the industry. We're trying to have diverse backgrounds, and what we're trying to do is represent all of the potential stakeholders inside the region with these different categories of representation. And so we get folks from all of these different categories, one or two from each, and that comprises the planning group. And I should mention that the administration for our planning group is done by Lower Colorado River Authority, so we owe a lot to the time and attention that they put to this. So the consulting team over here and others on the consulting team and myself, we really appreciate the administration by LCRA. They keep the process moving smoothly. Annette, Justin, Monica, thanks to you guys. Okay, so the next part of this discussion was going to be going through the initially prepared Region K plan, the IPP. And so I'm just going to briefly go through kind of highlights of each chapter. So we'll start with an executive summary. It's the TLDR of the IPP. I think one thing that, other than it just being an executive summary, I would point out, the Water Board put a lot of time and attention in between the previous planning cycle and this planning cycle of putting together what they call their DB27 reports. And what those are is all of the planning data that we put together as part of this process goes into a big database at the Water Board. And so all of that got submitted with the IPP. It's all up to date. It should be mostly correct, although it's being reviewed at this time. But these reports are the ability for the public and us and anybody to go in and query that database in this kind of systematic way. And it's a really good way for people to be able to learn about their local utility, what's happening in their local region, because you can get really specific with your queries and find out what's going on in terms of demands, population growth, supplies, strategies. I use it a lot in my own work just as a consultant, you know, looking what are happening with my clients or other things that are happening in the state. So it's incredibly useful. And so those DB27 reports are listed in the executive summary. So you can go there and kind of have a nice quick link to getting those reports. All right, so chapter one is a background chapter, so it's kind of what you would expect. We talk about physical description, climate, vegetation, basic social and economic aspects of the region, basics of the sources in terms of surface and groundwater, reuse, and we talk about the major water providers and kind of some of the categories that those fall in. But it's really just a background of the region, gives you a little history of the region and kind of how we got to where we are. Starting to get into the numbers in chapter two. So this is where we're talking about population projections and demand projections. And so if we look at this graph, figure 2.1, this is the population projections for Region K from 2030 to 2080. You can see in 2030, we're starting at 2.2 million. And by 2080, we have nearly doubled to 4.3 million. So we have a projected pretty significant population growth in this region. The projected total water demand is also increasing. So we start out at 1.1 million, and then we go all the way up to 1.4 million. And you can see it's not a linear increase with population, and there are reasons for that. I'll show you in the next slide. But basically, the focus of chapter two is here's how much we think population is going to grow, here's where we think it's going to grow, and here's how we think the water demand is going to change in response to that population growth or other factors like agriculture and other things. All right, so this graph here shows how the categories are changing. So we have these six categories. Municipal is going to be, you know, basically cities using water, livestock, irrigation, manufacturing, steam electric, and then mining. Those are all the categories. The two largest categories are the highest magnitude in terms of their values are agricultural and municipal. You can see where we start out here in 2030, agricultural is the highest use category. So something above 500,000 acre feet in the region. Municipal is something like 3.8 million acre feet. And as we go through time, the prediction is that municipal is going to increase as that population increase. Now, our conservation strategies are going to increase, so hopefully we're getting more efficient with our water. But the straight population demand is going to create growth in the demand in terms of water needs. Sorry. The irrigation basically is going to stay pretty steady, although it's projected to decline somewhat over time. Part of that is because we're predicting increased efficiency in the irrigation, and part of that is some of the acreage is going to be retired over time. We're predicting that at least, and we've had a lot of input from the folks down in the Gulf Coast that are the major users of the water. You know, you get some conversion of the acreage to solar farms, other uses, and so they're predicting some decline in overall demand, but most of that is driven by efficiency and conservation. And then the other categories are fairly steady through time. You want to look, and you can see the major population centers like Travis County are showing a lot of predicted growth. Williamson County is the same way, and Bastrop County also is predicting a lot of growth. This growth prediction is a little less than in the previous plan, but it's still more than doubling the population of Bastrop County over the planning period. Yes? Acre feet, yeah. So this axis is acre feet per year. This is acre feet, yes. Did I say people? I apologize. This is demands. My bad. Thank you, Andy. This is acre feet of use. Okay, so chapter three is where we're going to start talking about supplies. And so we have demands and we need supplies that will satisfy those demands. A lot of the chapter talks about the Highland Lakes because they're such an important contributor to our water supplies in this region. So there's a good focus at the start of the chapter on Highland Lakes and what the firm yield of those lakes are. And then also we have other reservoirs in the region that we talk about as well and their firm yields. And so we talk in terms of firm yields because we want the context to be, if there's a drought, then we can count on this supply. And so all of this is done under the assumption of drought. This is water availability in the region here, and it's divided in the gray, which is the surface water availability, and then the blue, which is groundwater availability. And you can see that groundwater availability increases slightly over time, just based on how much is planned to be pulled from the ground basically over time. The surface water availability decreases slightly over time, and that's because of sedimentation coming in. And then this is the water available, and I want to make sure that we distinguish between availability and then the supplies over here, because there can be a certain amount of water available, but you have to have the infrastructure in place in order to use the water. So we're always going to have a little less in terms of supplies than we do have source availability. So we add up our groundwater, our surface water, and our reuse. That number is going to be slightly bigger than what our supplies are predicted to be until we can grow our infrastructure and use all of the available source. All right, chapter four. So chapter four is about needs. So we have done our demands. So we've got demand projections. We've done our supplies, so, and again, limited by infrastructure, so how much water can we supply? And then we look at the difference between the demand and the supply, and that's going to identify where we have needs. And you can see by county, they're usually, whoops, I hit the wrong one. And how do I go back on this, Justin? There's a back there. There is a back there. Thank you, sir. In most of the counties, and this is county-wide, there are some needs identified. So in other words, there are some places where we have more demands than supplies. And that doesn't mean that on balance, like net for the county, there's a need, but rather that there's a portion of the county that has a need. So, you know, you'd have to build a pipeline to get it from the east part of the county to the west part of the county. Maybe we don't have that pipeline in place yet. So these are identifying needs by water user group for all of these counties. You can see a lot of these big numbers come from the rice irrigation. So Matagorda County, Colorado County, and then Wharton County. And that's because under firm yield conditions, they're not going to get the amount of water that they typically use to grow rice. So under drought conditions, generally, they're going to be short of water. So if we look at the needs by use type, you can see that, again, we add up all the irrigation need, and that's by far the biggest need. And it declines somewhat because the demands decline somewhat over time. And then our municipal needs are fairly modest to start with in 2030, but they do grow over time, and they get to almost a quarter of a million acre feet by 2080. So that's a pretty significant municipal need. Now, first tier needs are those when we just take our demands and we just take our supplies and we look at the difference between the two. Second tier needs are where we account for conservation and reuse. So as part of the planning process, we have to explicitly account for conservation and reuse. And this is a way of encouraging thinking about how we can conserve and reuse. And then we get to a second tier need. And what you can really see is that under irrigation in 2080, when we have this 230,000 acre feet demand, if we conserve and reuse, we can reduce that a little bit. We can get down to just over 200,000, but there's a limit to how much you can conserve when you're trying to grow rice, right? I mean, you need a certain amount of water. And so there's just, it's not quite the same as conservation for municipal, because you can see we go from 257,000 all the way down to about 90,000. So just through, not just, it's very hard to conserve and reuse. I'm not saying just through that, but these are strategies we can use, conservation and reuse, to really put a big dent in our municipal needs. Much harder to do that for agricultural needs. Okay, chapter 5 is where we talk about strategies. So it's just a big outline, and we're going, there's hundreds of strategies, and you can go find your favorite one. What I do encourage, because it's such a long chapter, and I find it even difficult to navigate, there's a summary table right at the start of the chapter that has all of the strategies. And so if you were going to, say, Aqua and Bastrop, and you said, I want to look at their ASR strategy, you can just go click this. This is a hot link here. Just go click it in the table, and it'll take you directly to where the strategy is described. The strategies will talk about how much water is going to come in, on what decade, how much it's going to cost, capital, O&M, and then what the basically cost per acre foot is. And we do that for every strategy. So every strategy should have a little write-up associated with it that talks about the amount of water and how much it's going to cost. And this is really the bulk. This is by far the largest chapter in the IPP. And kind of the whole point of the planning process is to get these strategies in the books for consideration in the future for funding. All right, chapter 6 is talking about impacts. And the context for that is that we develop all these strategies and we want to think about when we implement these strategies, what are going to be the impacts to the region. And the focus of the first part of it is we took all of the surface water strategies and did some surface water modeling, so water availability modeling, to look at how that's going to change flows and frequency of flows passing by various points along the river. And so basically we were just making sure that we're not going to have negative impacts due to these strategies. And that was the first part of it. I should note that there's not as much detail in the IPP on the impacts of groundwater strategies. Those impacts are captured inside the GMA joint planning process when we do our DFC and MAG runs. And so if you need detail on groundwater, you know, drawdowns and those kinds of things, you go to the explanatory report for the GMA, and that's where that detail is going to be. All right, so another thing aspect of Chapter 6 is unmet needs. So an unmet need is when we've got a demand that exceeds our supply. We did what we could to find strategies that were going to cover the need, but we did not find enough strategies to cover all the needs. Now, sometimes that's We really rely on the stakeholders, on the water user groups, to give us information on what strategies they can use to cover their needs. There are some cases where, for instance, Meadow Lakes, when I talked to their city manager, he said, look, I think you've got our demands a little bit wrong. We're built out, and y'all are showing, you know, higher demands than we have right now. And so, you know, we can go fix that in the next round of planning with their input, but we didn't have time to fix it now. So what we're showing is an unmet need that they don't think is real. And so their choice is to not try to develop a strategy for it. There's some other folks, you know, that have small needs like Maynard and others, and they're just not ready to participate in the process. You know, we made contact with them. They said, that's fine. We see that we have a small unmet need, but we're just going to choose not to participate at this time. So overall, we're not seeing any alarm bells going on with these unmet needs. The exception to what I just said is County Other Hays. The demand in County Other, so in the sort of outlying regions in Hays County where they have a lot of these developments coming in, they are right now struggling for water, and they're going to continue to struggle for water in Hays County in those areas. And strategies, we were pretty, I don't know, we didn't have a lot of luck coming up with any strategies because they need some large pipeline, something large coming from outside the county, and those strategies are not available right now. So that's just something we've identified. It's in the plan, and it's not like they're not aware. I mean, when you talk to the county officials there, they are aware, and so they're working on it, but we just didn't have anything that we thought was going to be able to cover this need by 2080. They're aggressively conserving rainwater. They're just doing a lot of things, but they're not quite getting there. So, all right, so that's Chapter 6. Chapter 7, we talk about drought, and then also something interesting, again, we talk about uncertainty and droughts worse than drought of record. And again, this is in this cycle, it's only qualitative. So we're just talking qualitatively about droughts worse than drought of record. I believe in the next cycle, there may be some requirements where we start to try to put our pencils to it. But right now, we just talk about measures for preparing for those types of droughts that are worse than a drought of record. You know, in terms of resilient water strategies, being conservative with your estimates, et cetera. One thing I like to point out is when we had this really bad drought, this is water use per capita per day. So what's the average that a person uses in their household per day? You can see the effect of the 2011 drought in the per capita per day use. It declines over the next couple of years as everybody really tightened up their belts and got good at conserving. Or at least that's what I'm seeing in that number. You know, there might be confounding factors, but it looks pretty clear to me that you can get down 20%. And I think a lot of the savings or a lot of the belt tightening that went on through that period has remained in place. And so people got their conservation plans in place, and they've kind of set it as a baseline where they're really trying to keep that low use, that lower use if possible, which is a good thing. Okay, Chapter 8 is where we talked about all of the region's recommendations, typically for the legislature or other policymakers. And so where we identify things in the region where we think that they would benefit from additional measures, either coming from the legislature, from the water board, maybe from the region itself. But this is where we summarize all of those items. It can range from groundwater, impacts to agricultural rural water supplies. There's a new one we did this time, education on water. So the region identified, hey, we could really do more about public outreach, you know, in terms of lake levels or groundwater levels or other things that we could kind of try to come together and be a little more formal about the way we do public outreach. So I think this is a really useful way to kind of take the pulse of the region in terms of what are the concerns in the region that we really want people to know about. Okay, Chapter 9 is a comparison between the previous plan and the new plan. So it's a really nice way where we're doing side-by-sides in terms of demands, in terms of population, in terms of supplies. So all those numbers get compared straight across. And so, for instance, if we went to Bastrop County, 2070 for the 2021 plan had this amount of demand, 75,000. We're now predicting 57,000. So as I said, the population growth estimate for Bastrop County changed a little bit between the previous plan and the new plan. There was a census in between there. So this is a nice summary so you can kind of see how things changed from the previous to the new plan. We did the same thing for availability and supplies, and there's slightly less availability in the new plan, and that is driven by the new the new surface water modeling that was done that predicted a slightly less firm yield for the Highland Lake system. It was mostly the Highland Lake system that was affected. So we new model, and I think in the next round we'll have new data for the naturalized flows, and so that'll probably change again in the next. So we're just trying to evolve. Each time we do this regional planning, we try to get better data, better models, stay up to date with our numbers. All right, and we're on to chapter 10, which is the last chapter, and that's really documentation of what we're doing in meetings like today. So all of the public outreach we've done through the process, I said 50 plus public meetings, feels like at least that many. We do WUG surveys and outreach, so we got really good response from them. Certainly not approaching 100%, but we got a lot of good feedback there. Something new this planning cycle was rural specific outreach. So in order to qualify as a water user group as part of the process, you have to supply 100 acre feet per year. And if you don't meet that threshold, then you kind of fall into this county other category. What the Water Board asked us to do is identify these utilities that fall under that 100 acre feet per year and reach out to them. And so we did a lot of certified mail and we did emails, and we really tried to make them aware of the process so they could be part of it as well, specifically instead of just being kind of aggregated into the county other category. I think having gone through that one cycle, I think we all have some ideas on how we could do that a little better. We didn't get a really good response from the rural specific outreach yet. We did get some, but I'm kind of hoping we can improve that in the next cycle. All the future hearings, meetings, this is the third and last public hearing, will be documented in the final plan in this chapter. And finally, this is the public notice, and so folks like Andy there, you've got until June 16th to submit your comments. So that's the deadline. We're asking that you send them to this email address here, but of course, if you send them to any of the consultants, we'll pass them right along. And so we're accepting written and oral comments. We've had two other public hearings, and this is the third one here, May 14th. I think that's probably the end of this talk. Yes, it is. All right. Thank you. Questions?
On the availability.
Yes.
It's showing like groundwater. I'm thinking of just my area, but that groundwater number that's stacked with the surface water.
It's the sum of all the managed available groundwater. Sorry, modeled available groundwater.
Okay.
So we just sum all of those. I'm okay. Still saying that. I can't get that right, man.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
But most of that model available groundwater is going to go to another region.
Yep.
So that's a big ask, but is there any way for the regional water plan to acknowledge that in the prose of the report? I don't know that it's possible to put it into the calculation. Because that's what we're seeing. And the related to that is that production in the Carrizo Rooftop will reduce the surface water in the Colorado by a significant amount. But is there a way to that in the pros and or in the calculations when looking at availability and its impact on supply?
Yeah, two good questions. So the first one was about exports. And so the same concern, there's the same concern for export of surface water, right? That the folks in the basin when we're moving it outside of our region. So the way that that's captured, and it is discussed to some extent in the text, but it's not quantitatively like project by project, like, you know, not discussed that way. The difference is seen though between available water and supplied water, because that water is available in the region, but it's not available as a supply to this region because the supply has gone out of region. Yes. But it's a little nuanced. You recognize it, and we write it down that it happens, but we don't go project by project to talk about that. Yeah. And then the second question was about surface water groundwater interaction and whether the impacts to surface water of pumping groundwater is considered in the surface water modeling. The answer is no. Those are not connected in the models. I know they are connected in reality, but they're not connected in the models. It's a valid comment, so, you know, I welcome it.
Still a work in progress.
Yeah. That. Okay, well, that's the end of that agenda item then. Appreciate it.
Excellent. Any other questions? We'll open it up to public comments if anybody would have any. None? Anybody from the group have any comments? 33 minutes. Then I will call this public hearing adjourned. The time is 10:33 by my watch, and I appreciate everybody being here.